This Janet Meffer Today podcast is brought to you by Enemies Within the Church, a documentary that will expose the false teachers and underlying agenda to undermine the influence of Christ across the world. For more information, visit enemieswithinthechurch.com.
This is Janet Meffer Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Meffer.
Thank you so much for joining us again. No family is perfect, that's for sure, but all of us could use a repair job, if you will, to keep our loved ones and homes running as they should, as God designed them to do. So we are going to get a little help with that today from counselor and bestselling author Dr. Gary Chapman. He is director of Marriage and Family Life Consultants, and today we'll be talking about his latest book with Shannon Warden. It is called The DIY Guide to Building a Family That Lasts. And it's so good to welcome you back, Dr. Chapman. How are you today?
Well, thank you, Janet. I am doing well, and it's great to be back with you again.
Thank you very much. Well, you liken this book to a kind of home improvement guide for your family. What would you say the similarities would be between home improvement and family improvement? How do you draw the comparison there?
Well, you know, we're using that metaphor because in home improvement, you first of all, you have to tear down some walls many times. You have to take out some windows many times. You have to fix leaking faucets and
yes.
All that sort of thing. So we're using that metaphor and saying, you know, we're not going to help you with your house, but we can help you with your family, with your home. And so we're trying to give tools in this book on how you can make changes, eliminate some things and replace them with other things. So in terms of communication, how to stop the leaky faucets so that you really are communicating to each other. So it's really a fun book, but it's a very, very practical book in terms of helping couples who want to have a better family life have some guidelines to use.
That's really good. I also enjoy the title, and I think the reason it struck me was because we have so many people who will give up on marriage or give up on family when things become difficult or there's some, you know, seemingly insurmountable conflict. And this really speaks to that issue, doesn't it, about, you know, every family does have problems. Every family does have its repairs that are needed. And how do you use this in the context of encouraging a permanent family, a family that stays together no matter what happens?
Well, you know, there's no question about it. None of us are perfect. There are no perfect husbands, no perfect wives, no perfect parents, no perfect children. The fact is, however, we are either improving or we're getting worse. Relationships do not remain the same. They're always changing. It's a matter of whether we're going to get better or whether we're going to get worse. And if we simply drift, that is, do nothing, we will drift apart in the family. But if you put your oars in the water and let's row together, we can make some differences. And that's what we're trying to do in this book.
That's true. Do you find most couples you talk to know where they are on that scale of either improving or getting worse? Or do you find most of us are a little bit oblivious?
Well, if you haven't given conscious thought to it, then chances are you're not really thinking about what needs to be improved. That's why in the book, at the end, we have a little home improvement inspection quiz.
Yes.
Where you answer some questions, and then you look at your answers, and it likely will tell you where you need some improvement in the relationship. So we're helping people get over the state of just being, you know, numb about their relationship to say, here's where we need help. Here's some things we need to do.
That's great. Well, I want to get into some of these tools that you list for improving your home. One being building kindness. And we all want to be kind to one another. And in the daily lives that we all live, sometimes that can not be paramount. But what do you mean when you talk about building kindness? What are some examples of how you can do that?
Well, you know, kindness is expressed either in words or in deeds. But it's words and deeds that are designed to enhance or enrich the lives of the other people in the family. And, the scriptures say, be kind to one another.
Right.
My observation is, I learned that when I was a kid. My observation is that children, if you're kind to them, they'll likely be kind to you.
Yes.
But if you mess with their art and push them around, they'll probably forget about being kind.
Yes.
And I think as adults, we're the same. If our spouse, for example, is being kind to us, we'd probably be kind to them. But if they're unkind to us, then we tend to come back with unkindness, and then it always spirals downhill.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is just consciously focus on acts of kindness and words of kindness. Think in terms of, for example, let's say at least one kind thing to every family member during the day. Or let's maybe do one kind thing. And when we do, we feel good, they feel good. It changes the emotional climate in the whole family when we begin to consciously think about being kind to each other. And we do suggest some pretty bold things. For example, once you lay this on the table with the whole family, let your children say to you, "Mommy, do you think what you just said was kind?"
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah, whoa is yeah, right.
Let them call us out on it, because we're not going to change if we don't become consciously aware that we're not being kind in something we say or something we do. And it's really fun. At the same time, it can be a little pushy when your child says something like that to you, but they're trying to help you. And let's face it, they're going to follow our model far more than they follow our teaching. We can tell them, be kind to each other. But when they hear us being kind, or they hear us being unkind, and they call us on it, it's teaching them and teaching us how to be kind to each other.
Yes. What else strikes me about that is when you are allowing your child to make that comment to you, what you're also demonstrating is a willingness to be humble, which is something that, you know, you don't always want to be telling your kids, you need to repent of this and repent of that and repent of this. Yeah. It's good for kids to see their parents repenting, too. That's a model that I think all of us benefit from seeing.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that we also talk about in the book is apologizing when we do wrong. You know, when you realize you lost your temper and you raised your voice at a child, to say to the child, "You know, Mary, I need to apologize to you. A mother should not talk to her daughter the way I talk to you.
Right.
And I'm going to ask you if you'll forgive me." You really won't have to worry about your children forgiving you. They'll always be willing to forgive you.
Yes.
And they know what you did was wrong. You know,
so yes.
When we apologize, we're not only mending the relationship, we're teaching them a skill that's extremely important in life, learning how to apologize when you do offensive things to someone.
That's great. What about increasing gratitude? We all need to have more gratitude, I think, to one another. Certainly, we need more gratitude to God for everything He's given to us. But in our relationships, that can wane at times. If you're busy in a household, you've got a lot on your plate. What would be some suggestions that you would offer for people to increase their gratitude among either their husband or wife or their kids?
Well, you know, sometimes you can start with inanimate objects before you start with the people. For example, we suggest that you give each child a sheet of paper with a pencil, put them in a room in the house, and say, "List five things in this room that you're thankful for."
Hmm.
Okay?
That's
then
good.
Come back and let's share that with the whole family. So everybody's talking about something they're thankful for in the house. That's easy to do, and it's kind of a fun thing to do. And then say, "Now, we want to start thinking and talking about how can we express gratitude to each other. For example, Mom cooked a meal last night. Did anybody here thank her for cooking the meal?" Well, maybe somebody did, maybe no one did. Let's learn how to thank each other for things that we do in the house. Like, "Johnny, yesterday you made your bed, but I'm your dad, but I didn't thank you for that. But I want to thank you now for that." You know, so now you're getting this concept on the table again, that we want to learn how to express gratitude to family members who are doing good things for all of us. For every family, there's some good things going on. I mean, you can't survive if somebody's not cooking and washing dishes and all kinds of other things.
Right.
It's just getting it on the front burner so we recognize that we have things that we should be thanking each other for.
Well, and it seems the practical outgrowth of that is your relationships get better. There is something about somebody thanking you for something you did that, I don't know, it just kind of makes the pettiness melt away a little bit and can really kind of soften if there's any kind of tension between you and somebody else in your family. It really helps ease that.
Yeah, and what it does, it changes the emotional climate in the home.
Yeah.
You know, some homes, the emotional climate is always tense because somebody's just barked out, you know, kind of a harsh word to somebody else, and then they bark back, and then everybody kind of moves away in silence. But it's emotionally, it's a lot of tension.
Yes.
And we're trying to replace that with a more positive emotional climate.
Very good. Hang on one moment. We're going to go to a break with Dr. Gary Chapman. The DIY Guide to Building a Family That Lasts is the book. Stay with us on Janet Mefford Today.
Hi, this is Kirk Cameron, and I am honored to be partnering with the Ministry of Preborn to help moms choose life.
Actor Kirk Cameron supports Preborn.
My four oldest children were adopted. That is because of caring and compassionate people who help those young mothers choose life. My wife is an adopted child, and her birth mother chose life for her. If it weren't for those caring individuals that help those young moms value the sacredness of life, I wouldn't have my wife, I wouldn't have my four adopted children, and the two natural born children that we have wouldn't exist either. My whole family is here because of people that are involved with ministries like Preborn.
Preborn funds pregnancy centers across the nation so they can offer free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. Ultrasound is a game changer because when abortion-minded women actually see their babies in their wombs for themselves, 80% of the time, they choose life. Would you please join us at Janet Mefford today to support the Ministry of Preborn? For $140, you can provide 5 free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. A gift of $22 will provide 1 ultrasound, and every gift helps. To donate, please call now, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your gift goes directly towards saving babies. You can get involved and you can help save a life for a gift of $140. 5 free ultrasounds will be offered to women in crisis pregnancies. Please call now with your gift, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-BABY, 855-402-2229, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. Thanks for joining us. And we're also happy to be joined by Dr. Gary Chapman. His new book, along with Shannon Warden, is called The DIY Guide to Building a Family That Lasts, 12 Tools for Improving Your Home Life. And we've talked about issues such as increasing gratitude and building kindness. One of the things that you also mention is one of the tools, Dr. Chapman, is seeking compromise. And that's always a challenge. But what would be some situations you think where compromise it becomes a really important skill to have within the family dynamic?
Well, you know, Janet, every couple will have conflicts for one simple reason. We're all human.
Right.
Humans don't think the same way, and humans don't have the same emotions. So we're going to have conflicts. There's nothing wrong with conflicts. But many couples have never learned how to solve conflicts, and so what they do is they argue with each other. They try to convince the other person that your idea is wrong and my idea is right. I sometimes say this, think about it this way. If you win an argument with your spouse, they lost. It's no fun to live with a loser.
Yeah.
So why would you create one?
Good point.
So learning how to solve conflicts, first of all, the couple, the married couple, and then teaching your children how to do that. I remember a little five-year-old, the family was talking about this, and the five-year-old said to the mother about a three-year-old or a four-year-old, he said, well, I'm trying to compromise, but they won't listen to what I say. And I thought, that's pretty typical of adults, you know.
Yeah,
I'm trying to compromise. Just do it my way.
That's right. It starts early, doesn't it? That's
so
true. Yep.
We talk about, you know, there's three basic ways, ultimately, to resolve a conflict. One is, yes, one of you chooses to go to the other person's side and say, yeah, let's do it that way. Or you choose to meet in the middle. So each of you gives up a little bit of what you wanted, but you find a meeting place in the middle. And the other is what we call meet you later, which means right now we seemingly can't get together on this. But it's 10 o'clock at night. Let's go to bed. Let's put it on the table, and we'll bring it back up tomorrow. So we're going to agree to disagree tonight. Now, some conflicts you can agree to disagree for a lifetime. For example, whether you squeeze the toothpaste in the middle or on the bottom. Mm-hmm. Just get two tubes, okay?
Right. It's not worth it.
No, and you can get two tubes. That works well for a lifetime. But others, you're just putting it overnight. You're going to come back and discuss it. But any resolution means we have to learn to listen to the other person, trying to understand what they're saying, what their viewpoint is, and how they're feeling. And if you listen long enough, you can honestly say, you know, honey, I think I understand what you're saying, and I can see that it makes sense. It does. It's not you. It's making sense to them. You know, maybe it doesn't make sense to you, but you can see how it makes sense. When you say that, you're no longer an enemy. You're a friend. And then you say, now let me share my perspective. And because you listen to them and affirm them, they likely will listen to you. Then you can honestly say, okay, we see it differently. Now how can we solve it?
Right.
You spend your energy looking for a solution rather than spending your energy trying to win the argument.
What if you have something where one person is in one corner and the other person's in the other corner and they're being nice to one another, but they simply cannot come to a compromise, and it's not on something like a toothpaste tube. It's on something really important, like a big family issue, what to do with the child or what to do with an extended family situation. Even if you have that dynamic where you're respecting one another, you might not be able to solve it to everybody's satisfaction. What then?
You know, I think there is a place, if the two of you talk about it a few times and you realize we're not getting any closer together, there is a place to call a counselor or an older adult couple, perhaps, who are further down the road, and say, why don't we share it with Mary and Jim? And let's see if they've ever faced anything like this and see if they have an idea. Because sometimes there are things that are possible that we can't see, but someone else, either a counselor or an older couple who've been through some of those things, can say, oh, you know, here's some other possibilities, and help you find something that you can't agree on.
That's good. Yeah, get some outside help and input. That can be a really helpful thing to have in those kinds of moments. What about forgiveness? This is another aspect, another tool that you mentioned in the book, choosing forgiveness. We always have to be able to forgive one another in the home. There's no doubt about it. You wouldn't make it if you couldn't forgive each other. But there can be those conflicts, you know, whether it's between siblings or even the spouses, where there is just a war going on of sorts. And there, I mean, I think that's a point at which a lot of couples, even sometimes Christian couples, will just give up and say, I can't get over X. How would you advise those people to handle the issue of forgiveness and how to work toward forgiveness?
Well, you know, I think that's why the scriptures say, when you're angry, don't sin.
Yeah.
And then it says, don't let the sun go down on your anger. We're hurt when our spouse does something, you know, that's hurtful. We are hurt emotionally. And so, yes, Jesus said, if your brother offends you, go talk to him. You know, go share it with him. So you go to try to work it out. And if they repent, Jesus said, you forgive them. And so, but even when they repent, or even when they apologize to us, and even sometimes when we say, okay, I'll forgive you, we really don't. We hold it inside. And we haven't pardoned them, which is what the word forgiveness means. We haven't pardoned them. We're still holding it against them. And we let bitterness develop, and eventually we get resentful of each other. And you get several unresolved issues, and that's when couples start thinking, as you said earlier, well, maybe we're not compatible. This is not going to work. We're too different. Reality is, all of us are different. It's just some of us learn how to reach conclusions, and when we are hurt and they do apologize, we do forgive them. We do let it go. You know, the scriptures say, the Old Testament in Isaiah, God said, I will forgive them and never again remember their sins against them. Wow.
Yes.
That's the model. We're to forgive as God forgives.
That's right.
And it doesn't mean we won't remember it, you know, in the mind, but we're not going to hold it against them when we do remember it. We're going to say to God, Lord, you know what I'm remembering today, and you know what I'm feeling again. Because the emotions sometimes come back with the memory, but I thank you that I forgave that. Now help me to do something good today. And we don't allow the memory and the emotions to control our behavior, but we do something loving, and the relationship moves forward.
That's really good. I like the advice you also give in that chapter about forgiveness, that it takes practice, and you should start with the small stuff. And I think that's kind of good. You know, not everything is on the level of, you know, adultery or something like that. Sometimes
right,
it's just
right.
You put that toilet paper roll the wrong way again, I'm going to kill you. But I mean, what are some examples of forgiving small and getting good at it?
Well, you know, there is a word in the Bible called forbearance that is close to forgiveness, but it's on those issues where what they did really was not a sin. I mean, sin has to be forgiven.
Yes.
But you mentioned the toilet paper, you know, and there's a whole string of those kind of things. You know, my wife, for example, doesn't know how to close drawers. That bugged me for years, you know, and I gave her lectures, you know, and all this kind of stuff. But eventually, you come to accept it. As I say, the biblical word is forbear. You come to just realize, okay, that's not the way they're wired, and it's not that big an issue. And I'm going to close the drawers. And so it's not a big deal. It's amazing to me how many things couples can have animosity toward each other that are not sinful. They're just different and irritating.
Yes.
And yes, I think we should request change. Always we should request change. But, you know, after a while we have to realize maybe they're not wired to do that. I sometimes say, you know, there's a lot of people who are not wired to keep up with their car keys. And I don't care how many times you put hooks out there in the garage and say, honey, hang them on the hook. They're not going to get them on the hook.
Right.
You just have to get two or three sets. And
right.
When they misplace one, you say, honey, use this one. We'll find the other one. And you will.
Yeah. Or take their shoes off before they come into the house. There are people who are just not wired to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Yes. You're describing a little bit of what I'm familiar with in my own home. Yeah, absolutely. That's good, though. And, you know, of all these tools, they're all such practical tools. And I think they're going to really help people who pick up your book and read this, Dr. Chapman. One of the ones I really appreciated, though, in the midst of all these important admonitions about forgiveness and compassion and so forth, is creating fun.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of us are living very busy lives. We have a lot going on with our kids and our jobs and all the rest. And it is important to just lighten up. What would you say to the family about having fun, just taking some time to not let everything be so heavy all the time?
Well, I think it's extremely important. In fact, just the simple physical feature of laughing out loud does something positive to the brain.
Yes.
So, you know, what if just, you know, let's say once a week, the dad or mom says, okay, let's everybody laugh out loud. And we just all laugh, you know. You feel better just from laughing.
It's funny.
It's just that simple.
You do.
But then we talk about, you know, doing things that at least some of the family enjoys and the others go because they want to do something, you know, with the other person. And it depends on the age of the children, of course, you know, the kind of things you do for fun. But we do need to make time for fun. As children grow up, they need memories of things we did together as a family where we all enjoyed doing them. And husbands and wives need fun, you know?
Yeah.
And so getting a babysitter periodically and the two of you going out and doing something that you enjoy doing is important also. So the family ought to be a happy place. We all ought to have the sense of, you know, when I go home, I'm going home to a happy place. You know, tragically, as you well know, Janet, a whole lot of children go home and they're not anticipating a happy place.
That's
because
right.
It's not a happy place.
Right.
And as parents, you know, when we use the DIY, do it yourself, we're not saying do it without God. We're just saying as parents, you take the lead in doing it yourself. Because if you don't make changes, you can't expect the kids to make changes. So we look to God to give us wisdom and then give us the ability to utilize these tools to make our family a better family. And the parents take the lead in that.
I love it. Well, Dr. Gary Chapman, the name of the book, The DIY Guide to Building a Family That Lasts. Great tips, and so good to have you back, Dr. Chapman. God bless you. Thanks a lot for being with us again.
Well, thank you, Janet. You keep up the good work.
Okay, you do the same. God bless you. We're going to come back on Janet Mefford Today right after this. Stay with us. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Enemies Within the Church, a documentary that will expose the false teachers and underlying agenda to undermine the influence of Christ across the world. For more information, visit enemieswithinthechurch.com. We are are back on Janet Mefford Today. Great to have you along. Boy, it's not easy to be a Christian in politics these days, is it? Because not only do you have to worry about somebody accusing you of doing something wrong, but then when you do something that's right, they also come after you. What am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about Mississippi State Representative Robert Foster. You've no doubt heard about this whole controversy, which should not be a controversy at all, involving Representative Foster. He is seeking to be a Republican candidate for governor in that state, and he committed the horrible crime of asking a female reporter to bring along a male counterpart if she wanted to ride along with his campaign and do a story because he wanted to avoid any opportunities for any awkward situation. So merely invoking the Billy Graham rule now gets you skewered. I have a lot I want to say on this particular story. But first of all, I want to go to WMC Action News 5, which fleshed out a little bit more. Cut one.
Mississippi gubernatorial candidate Robert Foster has ignited a controversy. It started when Larison Campbell, a politics reporter for Mississippi Today, asked to follow him on the campaign trail.
We want to show, you know, our readers not only like what it's like to be on the campaign trail, but sort of like the candidates' ideas, goals for Mississippi through the lens of how they're interacting with people, how they're campaigning, how they're selling their message.
Foster told her she could only shadow him if she brought a male colleague. He says he didn't want people to get the wrong idea, seeing him alone with a woman who wasn't his wife.
And they're going to look at a glimpse of somebody passing in the car or sitting together at a restaurant, eating alone with someone, and they're not always going to. They're going to make assumptions, and that's the way people are, and I don't want to put myself in a position to be assumed that I'm doing something I shouldn't be that's inappropriate.
Wonderful. What's wrong with that? What is wrong with honoring your marriage and saying, I want to make sure that I have the highest integrity possible and that I maintain my public persona exactly as I want it to be as a Christian in my personal life? I mean, don't we need politicians flooding this country with these similar values and these similar morals? Of course we do. But the Billy Graham rule is the problem. You can't want to be having the highest integrity and making sure that you're not alone with a woman who's not your wife. It's crazy. So why did he make the decision? Cut two.
Foster says it's part of his religious beliefs, but he's also worried about political perceptions.
It's all a possibility that my political opponents could try to exploit something against me if they wanted to, if they felt threatened in the race, that they might need an extra bump in the polls or knock me down a few points.
Campbell says she's interviewed Foster several times before. No problems. She calls his decision now sexist.
A woman only looks improper in this context if you view her as a sexual being first and as a reporter second. I was trying to do my job and they sexualized me.
Okay, I just want to comment on this from a couple of different angles. First of all, having been a reporter myself, I do understand when you have a situation where you are wanting to do an interview and you just want to do your job. So in that regard, I understand where she's coming from. I'm just trying to do my job. Please don't make this about me being a woman or a man. Okay, I can understand that on a little bit of a level that, you know, she's reacting to. I can. And I've been in this situation before as a reporter where a man, and even as a Christian, in a situation with a pastor or a Christian leader who says, I really want to have somebody else with us. And there is a little part of me sometimes that will go, really? I mean, I'm really not going to try to kiss you if there's not somebody else in the room. But I understand it. I understand it as a Christian. This man has integrity. And I end up saying to myself, this is a good guy. Like, this is a really positive thing. I think that this is good. And it's not just respectful to his wife. It's respectful to me. It's respectful to me. You know, and I think that those guidelines and those hedges that are talked about in regard to the Billy Graham rule that was so excoriated by the left when Mike Pence invoked it are good things. I think if we had a whole nation full of politicians who invoked the Billy Graham rule, we would have a lot of empty newspaper pages because there wouldn't be nearly the stories that we get. On the other hand, here was Foster's response to this charge that he was sexualizing the reporter. Cut three.
I didn't mean it in that way at all. It's just a policy that I've always had in my personal business and I continue to have in my political life and in personal life as well, that I'm not alone with another female that's not my wife.
Campbell hopes it sparks a conversation about the discrimination women face in the workforce, including in politics. Foster says despite criticism, he believes most Mississippians would agree with him.
Okay. This is where I want to go with this story, because Larison Campbell, the reporter in question at Mississippi Today, wrote an article about this a couple of days ago. And this is the headline, Robert Foster, GOP governor candidate, denies woman reporter access because of her gender. Okay, that's not even true. He denied a woman reporter unconditional access because of her gender. And he gave a couple of reasons. One was, as you heard there, he's just doing what he's always done as a Christian and a married man. He's trying to respect his marriage, which, yay for him. Why would that offend a reporter? But secondly, the other reason has nothing to do with her. Not really, only obliquely. The second reason is they know on the campaign trail that there are trackers out there. There are people who are trying to Roy Moore, especially candidates who are conservative. Did you not notice the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation process? Did you not notice what happened to Clarence Thomas? Did you miss the Roy Moore scandal? There are all kinds of situations in recent years where women come forward and it can't be proven that anything actually went on, but they make the claim and the poor guy is sitting there going, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. Where do I go to get back my reputation? Now, that's a danger in today's world. That is largely created by this salivating media, which is dying for scandals and dying to nail somebody to the wall because they're conservative. I don't blame this man. I would invoke the Billy Graham rule just for that reason alone. Secondly, I'm going back to my days as a reporter evaluating this. Larrison, you don't have a right to an interview. She talks about the fact that she's done stories on this guy before. So how could he suddenly be sexualizing her? Well, because you wanted to do a ride along. It was going to be a more extensive, you know, situation where you would be evaluating him and witnessing him. And it was a lot more one-on-one time and personal time. And that's a different situation than if you just caught him in a hallway on the way out of a press conference and asked him a couple of questions. So she knows this. But here's the real key. Here's the real key. The second paragraph in the article that she wrote, screaming about Robert Foster, says this. Bill Waller, a former state Supreme Court Chief Justice, and Lieutenant Governor Tate Reeves agreed to ride-alongs. Okay, these are the other two guys running against him with Mississippi Today reporter Adam Ganicho. That's a male reporter. So why is it that Foster, who is the outsider and the Tea Party candidate, is given a female reporter and the other two guys get a male reporter? Why would you refuse to give a male reporter to all three candidates? See, now this begins to smell a little bad, in my opinion. I'm not saying that they orchestrated a setup, but this other guy can do two ride-alongs and the woman can only do one. Maybe somebody could make the argument that Mississippi Today is discriminatory because you think a woman can only do one ride-along with a candidate, but you believe a man can do two. I mean, how far are you going to take this? It's absolutely preposterous, not to mention the fact that this woman gets on her website and writes a story about herself. Oh, I'm such a victim. Oh, the sexism. Oh, he wouldn't let me ride along with him. I am a victim. Oh, I am discriminated against. Get over yourself. You know, you're not the news. You're not the news. I am so sick and tired of reporters trying to make themselves the news. It's like Jim Acosta over at CNN. Oh, I'm the news. I'm the news. Oh, me. Trump is mad at me. Oh, I'm mistreated here. Oh, I'm such a victim. Nobody wants to hear that. That's not why you were supposed to be in that job. You're in that job to be invisible. You really are. And I know that's not the way it is with TV reporters because their faces are on TV. But generally speaking, you're there to cover the story. You're not there to be the story. And the minute reporters try to make themselves the story, to me, you lose all credibility. And I think Larrison Campbell just revealed herself as, you know, the main reason why he shouldn't let her cover his campaign is because she's acting this way. Would you want someone like this riding along with your campaign? I certainly wouldn't. Which brings me to my biggest point. And my biggest point is this. The same leftists who yelled and screamed about the Me Too movement and women being mistreated and being sexually harassed and sexual assault and how horrible it is, and it is, cannot turn on a dime and start screaming about a man who's honorable, because that is the most hypocritical thing I've ever seen in my life. You can't have it both ways. You can't yell at men for exploiting women and then turn around and yell at men for treating women well. How does that shake down? It makes no sense. We're going to come back. You're listening to Janet Mefford Today. Socialism is being purposely dressed up in Christian choir robes by once trusted and very influential church leaders. Their gatherings are growing in numbers as they shelve the true gospel and replace it with a false one known as the social gospel. What is this agenda to undermine the influence of Christ across the world? And whatever happened to powerful biblical Christianity? Noted producers Judd Saul, Trevor Loudon, Curtis Bowers, and Pastor Kerry Gordon of Cornerstone Church have joined forces to create enemies within the church, a hard-hitting international documentary that will reveal the plans and the players behind this movement and shine a bright light of restoration and hope upon Christ's church. We encourage you to partner with enemies within the church and help them complete this important project. To learn how to help and to stay updated about the film, go to enemieswithinthechurch.com. And while you're there, be sure to enjoy a sneak peek of the movie. Go now to enemieswithinthechurch.com. That's enemieswithinthechurch.com. Enemieswithinthechurch.com.
I was afraid. I was scared. I didn't know what to do. Everybody wanted me to have an abortion.
The battle for life has heated up in our country, and standing for life is more difficult than ever. The Ministry of Preborn empowers young women in crisis to choose life by letting an expectant mother hear her baby's heartbeat and see him on an ultrasound. She's 80% more likely to choose life for her baby.
She did let me hear the heartbeat, and I was like, wow, it's something like living inside of me. It was a beautiful thing to hear.
Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country. Would you join with Preborn and Janet Mefford today and help women with crisis pregnancies choose life? For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, call 855-402-BABY. We really need your help during these summer months when donations tend to slow down. Please help right now if you can. 855-402-BABY. 855-402-2229. Or there's a Preborn banner to click at Janet Mefford. We are back on Janet Mefford today. I was telling you about this candidate, GOP gubernatorial candidate in Mississippi, Representative Robert Foster. He's a state representative in that state, and he's under fire for telling a female reporter that he can't have her come on a ride along with his campaign unless there's a male counterpart with her, because he's trying to not only honor his marriage, he's also trying to make sure that nobody gets a stray picture of them together and tries to make it into something that it's not. And I don't blame him for that. It's not just the Kavanaugh stuff and the Clarence Thomas stuff. There are dirty people out there in politics who will try anything they can to knock you out of the race. And I don't blame him. I think he's being as careful as he can be. And that's just plain smart. Just plain smart. So Robert Foster is all in trouble for this. He's being called a sexist, but he's also being told, oh, you don't trust yourself. What's wrong with you that you can't be alone with a woman? Okay, I thought you guys didn't like Me Too and the whole movement there. You want it both ways. You want it both ways. I get really tired of that stuff. But here's another point of hypocrisy that I want to wind into this story, because it really pertains to something that I heard over on The View. You know how much I hate listening to The View. Whenever I have to encounter The View, it takes me a couple of days to recover. But they're weird over there. Boy, are they weird over there. You know, you can't be stuck in New York too long without having to leave, I think, just to get your bearings. Spend some time in flyover country at least 1 week a month, because it will normalize you. If you're spending all of your time in media circles in liberal Manhattan, you are going to get such a skewed view of the world. You're almost, I don't know, you're almost completely off the rails and without any help, because you can just tell. And I'm going to go to this audio because I think it really says a lot. You know, for example, what's been happening recently with this Jeffrey Epstein case. This is this pedophile, and now he's in legal trouble again. And Bill Clinton was a buddy, and they're trying to tie Donald Trump to him. Bill Clinton, actually, there's some stories out about the statement he put out on how many times he had been with Jeffrey Epstein and on his plane, and the numbers aren't corroborating. That's a whole other story. But now Whoopi Goldberg over at The View says evangelical leaders don't care enough about either sex trafficking or pedophilia while discussing this whole case about Jeffrey Epstein. It's really weird. Listen to cut 4.
You know who I'm waiting to hear from? All those folks that are out there that talk about they want to take care of young people and make sure young people are good. Why isn't the evangelical community coming for? Where is everybody? That was worrying me.
Yeah.
Because I thought, well, one of the ways that you show that you care about people is you come out and you condemn this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, and all the folks that I'm used to hearing talk about, you know, this one is bad or this is bad or this haven't said much. And I just was wondering where they were.
Why does she care? I mean, is it really a big question mark where evangelicals stand on sexual immorality and sex crimes? That's something that is just a big unknown. Evangelicals, where are you? I mean, we can't possibly figure out where you stand on the issue of pedophilia unless you speak out. Okay, Whoopi, I'm not a Franklin Graham. I'm not a Pat Robertson, but I can speak for myself. I very much oppose pedophilia, and I think they should throw the book at all pedophiles. And I also oppose sex trafficking, and I think they ought to bust up these sex trafficking rings and bust these people who are engaging in sex trafficking. Wow, I'm so brave. I mean, everybody thinks that, except for the people involved in it. I'm not really sure why she cares, nor do I understand who she wants to speak up. So Joy Behar and Meghan McCain got involved. Listen to this, Cut 5.
They seem to be worried about the culture changing. I mean, that's their issue. It's like, now we have gay marriage.
I don't think evangelicals are okay with pedophilia.
Have they said anything? I haven't heard from Jerry Falwell Jr.
I mean, again, I think the evangelical population in this country is massive. I mean, I think it's, I don't know the exact numbers, but I know it's huge. So the idea that, you know, we're going to blame evangelicals
not
right now for
them.
I want to be very clear. I'm not blaming anybody, but I
for
do
not
know.
Speaking out enough?
Well, I feel like we have heard from the community and the voices of the community.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a bit about a lot of different things. How I want to deal with my body, how you want to see your kid, whether children should be where. And I have been waiting for them to say, and by the way, this isn't okay with us either.
This isn't okay with us either, Whoopi. What do you want us to do? Of course it's not okay with us. But by the way, I thought that you guys thought we were a bunch of ignorant bigots. Why would you care what we think about Jeffrey Epstein? Why would you care what we think about sex trafficking or pedophilia? Why do you care so much? You know, you're sitting pretty there with your liberal buddies and you're going, but what about the Christians? Why aren't they speaking out? Every time we do speak out about things like pedophilia or the risks of pedophilia, you guys scream and yell at us and call us names and tell us we're dinosaurs and tell us we're over the top extremists who are laughable and everybody should pay no attention to us because we're freaks. But all of a sudden you care what we think about Jeffrey Epstein. It never is what it actually is. It never is. My theory on all of this is she probably wants to hear from evangelical leaders like Franklin Graham and so forth because she wants to trap them. How so? Well, the left is in a big situation now where they're trying to tie Trump to Jeffrey Epstein because Trump knew Jeffrey Epstein. He's already spoken out about it. But, oh, because you support Trump, maybe we can tie you to being a hypocrite for supporting Trump when Trump was buddies with Epstein. Well, you guys, why don't you talk about Bill Clinton then? Why don't you focus on that? See, it never is what they say it is. They couldn't care less about our morals. They hate our morals in most cases. If we talk about drag queen story time and we decry drag queen story time as something absolutely depraved, and the fact that you have these men in makeup and dresses reading stories to little kids, little boys who are then having boas put on them or draping themselves over a drag queen who's on the floor, and we have some problem with that, or we have some problem with a little kid like Desmond is amazing being a drag queen and being featured, by the way, on the same network that airs The View. If we say anything about that, we're a bunch of crazies. We're a bunch of weirdos. We just don't keep up with the times because, you know, it's wonderful. Desmond is amazing. We should let a little boy wear a dress and makeup and boas and parade him in front of the world on national television. That's fine. But, you know, you evangelicals, if you don't speak out about sex trafficking on the Jeffrey Epstein case, then, you know, you guys just have no moral credibility. Okay, first of all, people are speaking out about it. I don't even know who she follows, who she would know about, who's speaking out about it. It's crazy. Not to mention the fact that how many Christians are out there actually fighting on the ground on these issues? Lots of people. There are people who are working on the frontier of trying to help people harmed by porn, little kids harmed by porn, families harmed by porn. There are people working in the area of sex abuse. And last I checked, the left was all about shutting down therapy for kids who were sexually abused. So you guys are total hypocrites. And then What about the issue of sex trafficking? I know all kinds of people who are working in ministry to girls who have been sex trafficked. It's a big issue, and it's a growing issue in many parts of the country. And there are a lot of good people on the ground who are quietly serving their communities and helping these girls and sometimes these boys. Christians are at the forefront of these issues. But Whoopi Goldberg can sit in her little chair at The View and yell and scream about, where are the Christians? Where are the Christians? So McCain actually presses them on this point. Listen to cut six.
Who in particular would, right this second, Jerry Falwell Jr., who else?
That's one. Patton Robertson.
Mm-hmm. Look, my in-laws are evangelical, as I've said many times on this show, and they're really good people. And I think,
are
again...
Are they prominent, though? Would they have the platform?
I mean, they're not, but the I'm folks just, that would
the
be
one
coming.
We're talking
yeah,
about.
That's, you know, it's like Franklin Graham and yeah. those guys. Those are the people we're talking about.
I don't
this
think
is not
they
a condemnation.
Like
this is not... No, but I would like them to say something.
Oh, you couldn't care less if they say something. You just want them to say something so you can attack them and do some kind of Trump takedown. That's all you care about. You don't care about Franklin Graham's moral credibility. These people, you can see right through them. And the fact that they spend so much time on The View going after conservatives and going after Christians just proves that they're not saying these things in good faith. By the way, when I'm talking about the Bill Clinton issue, this is very interesting because... Former Bill Clinton, former President Bill Clinton's insistence that he knows nothing of the alleged crimes of Jeffrey Epstein is a lie, according to the executive director of the Alliance to Rescue Victims of Trafficking, Conchita Sarnoff, who was on Fox News this week and told Fox that pilot logs show Bill Clinton traveled 27 times on Epstein's private jet. Not just the four times that he tried to claim in his statement. And on nearly every trip, there were underage girls. This is somebody who works in the area of sex trafficking who was featured on Fox News. So maybe The View could take that up as a subject and maybe look into that a little bit. Or should we start making calls? Why isn't The View speaking out on Bill Clinton and his connection to Jeffrey Epstein? It is a crazy world. And you know what? Every single day, there is hypocrisy. Because every single day... We see clearly the truth of Scripture, that man is a sinner who needs to be saved. Thanks for joining us. We're out of time. We'll see you next time here on Janet Mefford Today. God bless.